This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
A great pleasure to be here. Yes, so UEA, one of those delicious seven universities founded in the 1960s, and now nearly all of them, the youngest in the top 200 universities in the world. UEA had as its founding ethos a very strong commitment to interdisciplinarity, and that led it to do very novel things which have given it a bit of a flying start, amongst other things, in environmental sciences, development studies and creative writing, and a whole raft of other things in later decades. So, in the early part of this century, we observed that we would like to expand rapidly our international student body, partly culturally, partly financially. Partly we wanted to make the education more cosmopolitan, and partly one observed that was the only way to grow rapidly at that time. But in deciding on that in about 2004, we did it just before there was actually quite a blip in many places, recruitment, and we had internal problems of a kind familiar to many universities, the sort of pre-university English language, English preparation type courses were at the very bottom of the food chain. Very few people working at it, not core business for the university, and very modestly marketed in the way of a medium-sized university. What we wanted to do was to expand, attract very strong students of a diverse origins and across each of the four faculties. And in sort of wrestling with that, we were delighted when we began a conversation with Andrew and began to explore a way of a public-private partnership where both sides would be very committed to something very upmarket, but would bring together their rather different sort of traditions and see if they couldn't be meshed in the most harmonious way. And I think they were. The model was this, that we formed a joint venture company, half owned by our partners, half owned by the university, a different legal structure from the university, with freedoms that the university per se would not have had, and planned to build on the campus a residential teaching block devoted to bringing over students, preparing them for university while they get really acclimatized, begin to actively use their English, but enjoy the amenities and the social life and the buzz of a real campus. And the division of labor was that the university set the academic standards, the university make very plain its fierce commitment to a most agreeable student experience. UEA has always been in the top five amongst mainstream English universities since the National Student Survey was introduced. And that in terms of the brand, that where the university per se was being projected, the university would retain control of that. But our partners brought extensive experience in pre-university education, in handling young international students, as well as a range of entrepreneurial skills, and critically, capital, ability to mobilize capital that would have been exceedingly difficult for us. And that division of labor, which our partners really, really thoroughly bought into, never any sort of gnawing at the standards, really sort of common commitment, we're going to be very upmarket in all that we do, has actually succeeded extremely well. There were all sorts of hurdles. You know, our partners wanted to get the whole thing going before there was a building. So the wonderful building was projected, but while it was still a little bit of a glint in the eye, and had to sort of do the first year's teaching in not the best conditions, but very rapidly changed the mood of those doing the teaching, altered academic attitudes to the whole business of bringing international students, thinking about what they should do by way of preparation for a degree, and so forth. And in no time, we found ourselves being engaged with a sort of private sector ethos that was very stimulating, sometimes challenging, very seldom actually leading to sort of friction. But I think I would say they moved faster than the university would have done without them. I mean, much faster. And the pressure to come on see through the quality assurance, get the brochures out, and so forth. You know, in a way, it was a delight to behold. What the courses, what the centre did then was to provide pre-university language, and then foundation courses for students who needed to do both more English and the academic content for a given degree, and also developed a course which sort of shadowed our year one, a diploma, so that students could come up their English, do a shadow year one and go right to the beginning of our year two, and did various preparations for postgraduate study as well. And the speed with which the building went up and with which the numbers began to flow exceeded our plans. I think it really exceeded them by about 2 years. Financially and sort of numerically in planning terms, the thought was that 60% of those who came to study pre-university courses would opt to and qualify to come on to a UEA degree, and some 40%, gradually declining percent, would either not qualify or would go somewhere else. And that has come to pass, so that our overseas student component has doubled in the just over 3 years since this got going, and the quality and the sort of usage of English has markedly gone up. I think it's a sign of our confidence and the stimulation that the partnership has brought, that we are now experimenting with an A-level, very upmarket, small group of A-level students specifically devoted to science, because one of our ambitions is to make sure that the subjects that the students from INTO do spread way beyond management and economics, which is where they tend to go, right across the cultural, the health, and critically, the science fields. And of course, on the basis of that, as most of you will know, INTO has gone on and formed a range of partnerships, one in Scotland, one in Northern Ireland, several in England, and now two in America. And it creates a family of very good universities with which I instantly have a common interest and a rather speedy way of both comparing notes and planning to do things together. Well, now, on the strength of that, the opportunity arose during the depth of the recent crash to create a base in London. And the fact that we now have very strong confidence in our partners meant that we quite quickly, coming from slightly different angles in exactly what we wanted out of a presence in London, reached an agreement. And from the university's point of view, it's a provincial university, a gorgeous province. Norfolk is the best place in England to live. But it is 100 miles and more from London, and Britain is so, so overwhelmed by London. So if you want to project your research and affect funders and policymakers and politicians and decision makers and the press, you need a presence in London. If you want to mount your sort of niche, very, very choice master's courses, London is the place to do it. I, partly because I come from overseas, also sort of do look upon London as terribly different from the rest of England. And my vision is that our undergraduates will have the option of spending a semester in London, rather like you might have a semester in Paris or Rome. Sort of look at it and all its gorgeous academic and cultural amenities, and a very small proportion of our students come from London. A lot of them are from the kind of families for whom London's a little bit scary. So a semester in London, it's not happening yet, but that is part of my vision. We did also think that the international student market is extremely fickle, that all the data shows where they really want to be is London, and when they come to places like Norwich, they tend to think it's pretty near London, isn't it? So it seemed as if you're sort of spreading your risk a little bit, as if you also have an international student enterprise in London. Not that it's critical at all in our financial planning that many of the students who come to our centre here for foundation and diploma programmes then head to Norwich. I think some will. It's much cheaper, it's much more pleasant, and so forth. But that's not the core purpose. I had seen one or two sister universities try and do this, create a London presence. But when there was nothing going on permanently in the building, it was often cold and the lights were switched off. So we wanted something humming. Andrew, on the other hand, had a range of ambitions about it that he could tell you more about, but it would be very much opening the way to developing both the kind of pathways that paralleled those in Norwich, and opening various other opportunities, including in time at degree level. So, again, with Andrew's help, Intu's help, we were able to mobilise the necessary financial commitment to take a 20-year lease on a brand new building next to one of the tallest student residence towers and the newest in all London. Absolutely nothing to do with us, but it sort of lends it a certain kind of credibility that an awful lot of students about. And a brand new, very agreeable, light, cheerful building with arrangement about taking on the lease that meant we could kit out the first three floors, pause, think, see whether we'd done it right, exactly what we have done, and early next year we will start kitting out the fourth and fifth floors. And again, the same kind of wonderful pressure for speed from our partners, but complete acceptance that the university must judge the issue of standards. A very effective division of labour, a dean for UEA London, rooted in Norwich but present in London, ensuring that academics in Norwich think of it as their own. It's only 4 minutes from Liverpool Street, so it's very easy to take a little detour. And it is actually beginning to develop all the things that I think both sides hoped. Niche MAs, an undergraduate degree which starts in September, a range of master's programmes, and already in September, and we only opened it very short notice in January, 400 students, and it's thought it will be 600 by January. And again, a very strong commitment to the student experience, very careful personal attention to the needs of different students. So, my sort of account, and I haven't heard what the sort of mood has been this morning, and I'm not quite sure what's going to be said afterwards, but my account would be that there are real opportunities, if you find the right partner, to bring in additional expertise, energy, and money to aid what is remains the commitment to a thoroughly public good, to the first-rate research and the most superb and energetic education we can generate. And we're finding other institutions very attracted. We're lending a little bit of the building to City University temporarily. St George's is about to come in for a period to develop a medical pathway alongside ours. It is a kind of third way. It is not undercutting. It is actually providing, I think, a very well-heeled and well-provided education. The two joint ventures, this is a subsidiary part of the matter from our point of view, but they are both on target to generate a very nice profit, which we split, the two partners split, and which can then be fed back into the base and into the research and into our mission in general. And I suppose two final thoughts. One is that Tier 4 and all that surrounds it makes one extraordinarily nervous, as our our enthusiasm for the international recruitment strengthens. But the alliance gives us a lot of early warning systems. It also means there are a lot of students already in the pipeline for university, even if Britain does suddenly do something extraordinarily stupid about international recruitment. And secondly, as we're watching all the goalposts move about the rules and the regulations and the public and the private division and the invitation to private providers to come in and take on the established universities. In this partnership, we're fully conscious we have a whole range of opportunities, which are just what one would dream of conjuring up now that this government is in power. But thanks to this partnership, we already have it and are considering a number of ways in which we may use it in the years to come. So there you are, John. That was what I was going to say. Let me just show you one or two more pictures of UEA London. It's in Middlesex Street, Petticoat Lane. It's sort of very nicely placed between very studenty bits and very smart city parts. That's this extraordinary tower block. I'm not sure that it's all full of students, but as I say, we don't have a financial commitment to it. That's the front entrance. The student body in these first few months is drawn from at least 27 countries, a wonderful mix, and a very interesting preliminary experiment with some British students who didn't get in elsewhere this September. As I say, students coming through those pathways are absolutely free, of course, to go to any university they fancy, and a lot of them are already heading. There are eight heading to a variety of different universities having studied at UEA London. So there you are. Okay? Thank you.